You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12s. Happy Blue Friday to all of our listeners. I'm Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. It's a rare victory Friday. Fans can rest easy this weekend. Seattle getting back in the win column with a 7-point win over Arizona on Thursday Night Football. I'm going to devote the bulk of this show to answering your questions in a special Friday mailbag. Let's get to it. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day, no matter how you watch this season. Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. These passionate fans are the real generational talent that Pepsi fuels. Because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game, it's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. Breaking a 2-game losing skid, the Seahawks withstood a late rally this time around from the Cardinals at Lumen Field, holding on for a 28-21 win to improve to 7-3 and retake first place in the NFC West, as Coach Pete Carroll said after the game. After 2 weeks of calling his team unrecognizable, it felt like the Seahawks on Sunday night. They got back to running the football with Carlos Hyde on offense, took a lot of pressure off Russell Wilson. Hyde finished the game with 14 carries for 79 yards, scored a touchdown, plowed over Patrick Peterson on one of his three 15-plus yard runs in this game. So they got physicality. They got explosiveness. He made guys miss in space. This is what the Seahawks have been missing for the last 3 weeks without him and Chris Carson available. And no offense to the other running backs in the roster. Seattle's got some other good running backs, but they simply did not command the respect of opposing defenses. And so, therefore, coordinators were able to come out and really come after Russell Wilson and throw the house at him in terms of blitzes. And it really was giving Wilson issues the last couple weeks. They just didn't have a running game that they could lean on to complement him. And that was one of the reasons you saw the quarterback forcing throws and turning the ball over, unlike any point that we had seen earlier in his career. In this game, he was very efficient. This looked like a pre-2019 Russell Wilson game. He completed 82% of his passes, just 197 passing yards, but 2 touchdowns in the first half to DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, and most importantly, no turnovers. He did a really nice job taking care of the football. Only one explosive pass play on the day of more than 20 yards, and that was a 25-yard strike to Metcalf for a touchdown. There was another one that went for 41 yards that was wiped out by a penalty, but really, the Seahawks in this game were winning with the short to intermediate passing game and running the football with Carlos Hyde. And Bo Scarborough, before he got hurt late in the game, had some really nice runs as well. So they were able to get that balance that Pete Carroll was preaching all week. It took pressure off Russell Wilson, and he delivered. It was a signature Russell Wilson performance. Not the best game he's had this year, but he played really well, and it helped him withstand the Cardinals' rally late in the game. It almost looked like it was going to be deja vu compared to Week 7 when the Cardinals came back from 10 down. They tried to make a couple runs at this game in the fourth quarter, but the Seahawks weren't having any of it, and a lot of it had to do with the defense. What can you say about that group last night? The much maligned group that has given up nearly 30 points per game this year has been on a historic pace giving up passing yards to this point. They have been scrutinized week in, week out, and rightfully so. But they really started to turn things around in that second half against the Rams on Sunday, giving up only 6 points. For them to come out in this game and hold the Cardinals to 7 points in the first half, and this is a really high-powered offense, to hold them to 21 points the entire game and come up with several big stops, this was the best performance that they've had. And so I'm going to give a lot of the credit to that defensive line. And it starts with the newcomer, Carlos Dunlap. Yesterday had a dominant effort. 2 sacks, 3 quarterback hits on Kyler Murray. They didn't get a single quarterback hit on Murray when these two teams played in Week 7. Last night, they only racked up 4 according to NFL stats, but they still were able to generate a lot of pressures. I tallied 21 total pressures by the defensive line alone, 8 of them coming from Dunlap. And so this group was very disruptive from the opening couple drives. They forced 2 3-and-outs to open the game, and everybody in the press box was kind of looking at each other like the Seahawks can get 3-and-outs, and they did it twice. Ended up getting a couple more of them later in the game. You take away a couple drives in the second half where penalties ended up making drives extended and the defense got gassed. They gave up a couple touchdowns. You take those out of the equation. This was a dominant effort by the defense, and it started with that defensive line, the ability to get after Kyler Murray, put pressure on him. They contained him well. Only a couple times he got outside of the pocket successfully. He only had 15 rushing yards on 5 attempts in this game, too. And so you got to give the defensive line a lot of credit there. They set the edge well. Kenyon Drake was never able to really get going. Chase Edmonds only had 2 carries in the entire game, and he was a problem for them last time. I'm surprised they didn't get him more involved. He was one of their top receivers in this game, and that's where the secondary comes into play. I thought the secondary fed off of the energy from the guys up front, and players like Puna Ford, Carlos Dunlap and company, all of those guys had really good games, and the secondary fed off that. Trey Flowers and DJ Reed on the outside. There were some mistakes. They weren't perfect, but for them to be missing 2 starting corners and go out there and hold DeAndre Hopkins to 5 receptions for 51 yards, that's astounding. They really did a nice job on the outside. You take away a couple really nice throws from Kyler Murray, they held the Cardinals to 314 total yards. That's easily the lowest total that the Seahawks have had all year. So they set new season lows in points given up for a game and total yardage. Well under 300 yards passing to Kyler Murray. They gave up 360 to him in Arizona. So many different areas of improvement. And then you get the big safety that was forced by a holding penalty in the fourth quarter. The Cardinals had cut it to 2 when they had the football, and they were deep in their own territory. There was an intentional grounding penalty set up by Jamal Adams blitzing after Murray, threw it into the ground, no receivers nearby. Very next play, LJ Collier, what a game he had. Another player in the defensive line. He had his 2nd sack of the year, but this might have been the biggest play he made the entire game. He slanted inside of the A-gap against former Seahawk J.R. Sweezy, forced the hold in the end zone. Officials flagged it. That's an automatic 2 points for the safety. So a 23-21 game suddenly becomes 25-21. Seahawks go down and tack on 1 more Jason Myers field goal. The Cardinals made a rally, but Carlos Dunlap coming up big again on 4th and 10. Gets around the corner on just a 3-man rush. That was a great thing this game. All 3 sacks they had came on 3 and 4-man rushes, not with extra blitzers coming. He gets to Kyler Murray, wraps him up, brings him down, and the sidelines erupt. Players sprint onto the field. The energy that he brought to this defense, it really did rub off on everybody else in the defensive line and the rest of the defense all night long. That's already looking like a home run acquisition by John Schneider. And with that, the Seahawks are able to escape. First game at Lumen Field with the victory. They are now 5-0 at home this year. And even without fans, they've had pretty good home field advantage. They have played well at home all year long. Several very close calls, but they keep finding ways to win games there. And this was an encouraging bounce-back performance because your defense now in 6 quarters has given up just 27 points. It seems like they are really turning the corner. You're going to get Shaquille Griffin back after this long 10-day mini-bye. Got a couple other players like Daryl Taylor that have a chance to come back soon as well, pitch in, rushing off the edge. There's a lot to like on the defensive side of the ball after such a rough first half of the season. They're really turning the corner, it looks like. And on offense, they got back to their bread and butter. They provided some run game for Russell Wilson. Chris Carson's going to be back after this week. Rashad Penny's getting close. They're going to have a 3-headed monster potentially there in the backfield that they were hoping all along that they could have. So a lot of good stuff to take from this. They can enjoy this 10 days mini bye being off before they play the Eagles on Monday Night Football. And this was a must-win game. They got it done. The schedule certainly is going to get softer from here on out. Now the path is in place to get to 12 wins. The question is, can they get it done, or will there be some slip-ups in there? Pete Carroll and company hoping that's not the case. When I return here on the Locked On Seahawks podcast, this is going to be a special edition Friday mailbag. Tons of questions from you, the 12s, and I'm going to be answering as many of them as I can here over the next 20 minutes or so. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day, no matter how you watch this season. If you're like me and can't wait to see Russell Wilson cook for the Seahawks this fall, Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. Because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game, it's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Friday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, riding solo today. Rob Rang will be back in the saddle on Monday. We'll really dive in to the Seahawks-Cardinals matchup, some offensive takeaways and defensive takeaways. And then as we progress in the week, of course, start getting ready for Seattle's next game, traveling to Philadelphia to face Carson Wentz and the Eagles. Today, with the Seahawks game being yesterday, getting the victory, a little bit different schedule this week. A lot of fans had a ton of questions on social media today. I decided, why not make this a Friday mailbag segment? So first one coming from Cold Ones tweets, where does Daryl Taylor fit in the defensive line? Assuming he comes back next week for the Eagles game, he's a Leo type to me, but I doubt he will take any snaps away from Dunlap, who's looking like a game-changing pass rusher lately. That last part there is very true. I don't think that Taylor's return is necessarily going to cut into Carlos Dunlap's reps. What I'm curious about, Benson Maioa returned yesterday and got a few reps in the game coming off a high ankle sprain, but you got to wonder now if this is going to be a similar situation for him that he had in Oakland last year and he had in Arizona the year before, where some younger rushers end up getting reps at the end of the season, especially coming off of his injury. Maioa has not been as productive as I thought he was going to be for them this year. I do think in a rotational role like he's in right now, he's got a chance to be fresher on the field, and he may have more punch off the edge, but he might be the guy that ends up losing some reps when Daryl Taylor returns, and I don't know how much Taylor's going to play when he first gets activated. We have to remember, no training camp for him this year as a rookie. He's been on the non-football injury list all season long. He's coming off the leg injury that he's had some setbacks with. It sounds like he's finally over the hump now. A good chance to practice this week. But I don't know if this is a guy they're suddenly going to be like, hey, 20 snaps a game for you. I think he's going to have to wean his way back in. So maybe he takes a few snaps from Dunlap, takes a few from Maioa. They're going to find ways to get him out there, though. There's a reason they traded up for him. And once he's had a few games under his belt, that's when you're going to start seeing him play more. And so they're hoping he can give them another guy that's going to be able to provide 10 snaps, 15 snaps a game, bend his ears back, and be able to get after the quarterback. Robert Green tweets, are we thankful the Hawks passed on Jadeveon Clowney? You can always look back in hindsight on these type of moves and say, hey, the Seahawks made the right move. To this point, it looks like John Schneider made the right move. And the thing is, the Seahawks had a similar deal on the table to the Titans. I think at that point, Clowney wanted to reunite with Mike Vrabel, who coached him when he was with the Houston Texans. I think at that point that his relationship with the Seahawks had probably soured enough that he just wasn't going to take the deal. It's turned out to be a good move. The Seahawks not ending up paying him $15 million. Clowney still does not have a sack yet this season. Maybe in Seattle things would have been different, but the Titans, that was supposed to be a better scheme for him, playing more of that linebacker role that he played with the Texans, and yet it has not translated to production. So, you know, you can look at some of the other moves Seattle made. Like I said, Maioa has not produced as I expected. Bruce Irvin getting hurt in week two was unfortunate. So the players they did end up signing didn't work out necessarily either, but they were able to rectify things, it looks like, by trading for Dunlap. So the way things have played out have ended up working out in Seattle's favor, but certainly it seemed like it was a draw just with the fact that so many of these free agent pass rushers have not produced this year. I don't know if it's because of the COVID situation or whatnot, but a lot of these veterans that signed free agent contracts just haven't been productive this year. MJ tweets, who do you want to see raise the 12th man flag that hasn't yet? I'd love to see new Seattle Kraken GM Ron Francis. Well, that would have been a name I would have probably thrown out there. Get some people involved with the new hockey franchise to raise the 12th man flag. Obviously, it won't be happening anytime soon with there not being fans in the stands. They've had Blitz, the mascot, being the one that's raised the 12th man flag every single game at home this year, and I don't see that changing until fans are back in the stands. But when we do have normalcy return, it would be cool to see some people around that hockey program get involved. As far as people that have not raised the 12-man flag yet, I don't have a list in front of me to know which former players have not gotten a chance, but it would be cool to see some other players from those early 2000s teams that started to build to what became that 2005 Super Bowl squad. They had some good players there that I don't believe have had a chance to raise the 12th man flag. Somebody like, say, a Reggie Tongue that was an underrated player for their secondary for a few years. It'd be cool to see him bring back a player like that next season once they're able to have some celebrities raise the 12th man flag again. Those would be the type of players I would look at. Maybe guys that weren't stars but were good players for your defense or your offense, and bring them back and let them soak up the 12th flag opportunity there. Brian Masterson tweets, DJ Reed has had some nice plays. What do you think the starting secondary should be with everyone healthy? I would still say if everyone's healthy that it needs to be Shaquille Griffin and Quentin Dunbar at corner. I know Dunbar has struggled, but he's clearly been playing with an injury. Has not been close to 100%. Early in the season when he was healthy, he was getting good jumps on the football. Should have had two or three interceptions the first couple games, and he dropped a couple of them. I still think he and Griffin can be solid corners on the outside. Unfortunately, durability's been an issue. And of course, the safeties are going to be Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs, who had his best game of the season last night, by the way. I think you just got to get those four in the field. They just haven't been able to do it. And so the chemistry has not been built. Reed has done some nice things, but I don't know necessarily a guy that's going to be an outside corner for you full-time, but they're going to find ways to get him involved. He's going to be returning kicks from here on out. He's been really impressive back there. Sub-packages, they'll find some ways to get him on the field. He and Ugo Amadi have some similar skills, but there's some differences in the way that those two play the game as well. And so they think they can do some mixing and matching with those two guys in the secondary when everybody's healthy, and he's going to contribute on special teams. Seahawks Girl tweets, what's the word on Stephon Sullivan? Is he still training as a defensive end, gone back to receiver tight end? No one has mentioned him lately. Well, I would kind of say all of the above. They're still using him as a tight end, but he's getting work at practice as a defensive end too. With Greg Olsen's injury, maybe they give him some more opportunities at tight end now, but I think he's a player that, unless they have some injuries again, they were missing some players against the 49ers. That's why he got called up that game. He's probably a developmental project. I don't know if he's going to get another opportunity to play this year. If there's injuries, they could certainly bring him up, but for now, I think he's a guy they're still very high on. They just need more time to work with him on the practice field. Kraken Man tweets, will John Schneider start doing any extensions, new contracts during the season, or will he wait till the offseason? Normally, John Schneider, if he's going to make extensions happen, it's going to be before the season. And they didn't do that really this year. I think with the COVID situation, all these teams, right now the payroll, the salary cap is going to go down $25 million for next season. So every franchise is going to be cutting back some. And so I think extensions and new deals at this point aren't going to be happening until the league year is over with. They may negotiate some deals with players before free agency opens, but at this point, some of the bigger name guys like Chris Carson, Shaquille Griffin, they've been injured. They've had issues staying healthy. There's, from Griffin's standpoint, there's been some inconsistency still in his game. I'm not sure they have any players right now that are going to be free agents that John Schneider's just rushing to give them a deal right this second, from a number of different factors. So it's going to be an exciting, interesting offseason for all these teams. New territory coming out of this pandemic, hopefully, but they're in a situation where none of those deals, I don't think they'll happen anytime soon. Matt tweets, which games are the most likely trap games the rest of the way? So you look at the rest of the schedule, the Eagles have talent. They have not played that way this year. They've had a ton of injuries. I do think there are some major flaws in that football team, and Carson Wentz has struggled. So Philadelphia, that's a game where if they bring their A game, they could be tough on the road coming up here in Week 12. The next couple weeks after that, the New York Jets, I mean, that would be the ultimate trap game. Sam Darnold can be a good quarterback, but they have not won a game yet this year. Darnold's missed a bunch of games with injuries. Joe Flacco's their backup. They've gotten rid of a bunch of players via trade. So that's a game the Seahawks have absolutely no excuse losing. And the New York Giants the week after, they've been very competitive. They just have not been able to finish games. They had a chance to beat the Buccaneers a few weeks ago. So that would be a team that, out of the four teams they're going to be playing here coming up, Washington is the 15th game of the season. That'll be coming up as well. All of those teams have dismal records. I think those last two teams from the NFC East are going to be interesting because you're going to have to face Alex Smith now at this point. And Alex Smith is still a good quarterback. So Washington could give you an interesting fight. That's a road game as well. They're going to have to travel across the country. So that might have trap game road on it. And, of course, the Giants the week before depends what Daniel Jones that you get. He has flashes where he looks really good, and then he makes horrible mistakes. They've got some other players that have some upside, of course, missing Saquon Barkley, which is a big deal for their offense. But certainly those two games maybe could be qualified as trap games, but Seattle will be heavily favored to win all of those games. They just need to go out and take care of their business, and then you finish up with the Rams at home and a injury-depleted 49ers squad on the road to close out the season. Seattle really has the schedule in favor right now to get to at least 11 wins, if not 12 or 13. It's not impossible they could run the table. Those last two games, I would expect, are going to be challenging in the NFC West. But these next four games, it's a bit of a change-up compared to what they've played against the past few weeks. They had a gauntlet. They got through it. They lost a few of those games. Now they have a chance to pad that record a little bit against some of the weak teams in the NFC East as well as the AFC East. Serdar Bulut tweets, who will be next week's cornerback starters, Griffin and Reed or Griffin and Flowers? DJ Reed played really well, and I believed he will beat Flowers for that position. I actually am going to disagree with you. This kind of goes back to an earlier question talking about where Reed fits in. I've been impressed with how he's played. But Trey Flowers yesterday played really well, too. He missed a big tackle on DeAndre Hopkins, but otherwise, he was a big reason they held Hopkins to 51 receiving yards in this game, and he's been playing much better football as of late. He has started a lot of games in this system, so until Dunbar's back, they get Shaquille Griffin back next week. I think he and Flowers, the two starters from the previous two seasons, those two will be the ones that are out there. DJ Reed's going to get sprinkled in sub-packages and play special teams, but with his height, his lack of arm length, and the fact that Trey Flowers has been in the scheme for a long time and is playing well, I don't see him sticking in the lineup here, given the three players that they'll have available. Brandon tweets, any chance of bringing back Justin Britt? I think at this point, it's pretty slim to none that that's going to happen. They really were in a tough spot here with Ethan Posey being in concussion protocol. Sounds like he's going to be ready to return for the Eagles game. Carroll said that he, Griffin, and Carson were all going to be back. Confirmed that. So, barring something happening, a setback that's unforeseen, he's going to be playing. You should have Kyle Fuller feeling better after having 10 days to rest up that high ankle sprain, and Damian Lewis just proved that he can play center in a pinch if you need him. This is just not a year where if you're a veteran free agent looking for a team, it's not an ideal situation because you got to go through that testing protocol, 5 negative tests in 6 days before you can even practice. And so, yes, Seattle's got 10 days to work with. They feasibly could make it work now if they wanted him. I just don't think now they have a reason to because Posick is supposed to be back and they've got this mini buy here for players to get healthy. Joel Ordaz tweets, how much does losing Greg Olsen for a couple weeks impact the Seahawks? You know, Olsen's been disappointing from a statistical standpoint. I thought he was going to be a bit more involved in their passing game. Did have a couple catches last night before he got hurt. It just hasn't clicked chemistry-wise on the field, which is odd because in training camp, he and Russell Wilson looked fantastic. They looked really good in the mock scrimmages, too. But they've had a lot of opportunities where Wilson just has not been able to get the football to him. And the connection just hasn't been there, and I kept thinking maybe this will be the game that it happens. And so to this point, from that perspective, I don't know how big of a loss it's going to be. He has been good at picking up key first downs for them, moving the chains when he's had opportunities to catch the football, and he and Wilson have been on the same page. I think his veteran mentorship is probably the area that they're going to miss him the most, and he is certainly a player that the light switch could have come on, and he could have had a big game or two here in the second half, but I think the biggest thing, the biggest impact that losing him is going to have on this football team is his leadership. And obviously, he's still going to be at practice. He's still going to be around the football team. But he is a lead-by-example kind of guy. And he's not going to be able to do that right now, being sidelined for at least 4 to 6 weeks. He might be done for the season. We don't know what his injury outlook truly is going to look like. Right now, it sounds like the Seahawks are still trying to figure out the extent of his injury and whether or not it's going to allow him to come back before the regular season ends or early in the playoffs. I think a visit to the injured reserve is definitely in line here, and their hope will be that he can somehow make a quick recovery. But Colby Parkinson's the guy that's going to have to step up now. With Luke Wilson being in Baltimore and not being signed off the practice squad, most likely with COVID rules, the Seahawks are going to let the rookie go. And he's been inactive the last few weeks. He's going to get his chance to get some snaps now. And they really liked him coming out of Stanford. So getting thrown in the fire a little bit here. But he will be eager for that opportunity to play. Christian tweets, I had Bo Scarborough always as a highly talented and tough running back at Alabama and was surprised he fell down to the seventh round and became a journeyman in the NFL. What is the reason for that? What are his strengths and weaknesses? Can he stay long term? So, first and foremost, I did not think he was a seventh round pick. I looked at him as a late day two, early day three caliber talent. The reason he fell to the seventh round was confirmed again last night. He just can't stay healthy. He's had a number of injuries dating back to his time at Alabama, his final season with the Crimson Tide. He ended up losing out snaps. Of course, they had tons of NFL caliber running backs at Alabama. They always do. But he was a player that was getting Heisman buzz going into that season that had disappointing numbers. He battled injuries again. So durability's been an issue. As far as strength, you saw some last night. You saw some of them last night. He is a powerful runner, long strides. He's faster than he looks on the field. He makes up space quickly, and he is decisive. When he wants to get downhill, he makes his cuts. He gets downhill, and he lowers the boom. A very physical back in that sense. He fits Seattle perfectly. As far as weaknesses go, he is not a guy that's going to make you miss much in space. He's not a guy that's got a ton of wiggle. He truly is a downhill runner. He can run some to the outside because he's got good speed for his size, but not a blazer necessarily either. A between-the-tackles runner, generally, that can get downhill, plow people, isn't going to make people miss in space very often. Kind of lean in the lower body, that was always something that concerned me, and I think that's one of the reasons he's had issues staying healthy. And as far as long-term outlook, at this stage of his career, he's just trying to latch on with practice squads and get opportunities, and that's what was so bumming about last night, because he was playing well. And unfortunately, when the Seahawks have everybody healthy, there's not room for him. They've got Rashad Penny, Chris Carson, Carlos Hyde, Travis Homer, DJ Dallas. There's really not room for him, but he and Alex Collins are both good guys to keep on the practice squad because we saw this last December. You can never have too many good running backs. And so long term, I don't see him as a guy the Seahawks are going to be hanging on to. If Chris Carson leaves after this year, maybe he comes back to camp with them. He's always been a player that Pete Carroll has liked, but he right now is not a guy that's going to be a fixture in that backfield, unfortunately. It was nice to see him go out and play well. I wish he would get an opportunity somewhere to get extensive snaps, but again, durability has been a major issue for him for quite some time. Dylan tweets, do you believe the Seahawks should start receiving the kick when they win the toss? If they can go down and score, it relieves pressure from the offense and defense. You know, this just comes down to, you know, coach's philosophy, and Pete Carroll was asked about this recently. That's not something that he was going to dive into with us. He said there was rationale behind it. He just didn't want to explore that, delve into it any further with us. But certainly most coaches subscribe to the idea if we win the toss, we're going to kick first because they like having the football coming out of halftime. But I can agree with you. I can see the rationale the other way, especially when you have Russell Wilson at quarterback. If you can get him going early, go right down the field and score, and we've seen him do that when they've lost coin tosses, and it hasn't been a big deal coming out of the second half for him either, being on defense first. I mean, I think it's just one of those things philosophically. If you're an offensive football team and you've got tons of weapons, coaches might lean towards, let's just get him going right away. But generally, most coaches play the same card that Carroll does, and they're going to kick there so they can get the football to open the final two quarters. They're the most important ones for most coaches. Unfazed and empty tweets, how good do you think the pass rush can be when Benson Maiyoua and Darrell Taylor get fully integrated back into the defense? You know, I don't know necessarily that those two guys are going to be the reason that it's going to be good, but they've got 25 sacks now in the season. They've had 13 of them the last three games, and that is the Carlos Dunlap effect. He on his own has been a wrecking ball, and the rest of the defensive line has played well off of him. And I think the guy that's been most noticeable has been Puna Ford. Six pressures yesterday against the Cardinals. He's had three straight games where he's really been an impact player rushing the quarterback from the interior. And LJ Collier is making a ton of progress. He's becoming a problem, especially when they have passing downs and they reduce him and Rasheem Green down as defensive tackles with their quickness. You saw that quickness from Collier yesterday getting the safety and beating J.R. Sweezy inside, forcing the hold. He is a problem inside. He is not a great athlete for a defensive end, but as a defensive tackle, he is a plus athlete. at around 280 pounds. And so you're really seeing him come on. Alton Robinson keeps getting better each week. And so I just think when you look at the group they've got now, they've got a nice blend of veterans and young players. Benson Maioa, I think, can be more effective being in a reserve role like he's done the last couple of years. And Darryl Taylor's a player they've been very high on. So you just add more weaponry to that pass rush, and you can keep guys fresh by rotating a lot. I think this group, what we've seen the last 3 weeks, I don't think it's an aberration. This group is just playing better. And Carlos Dunlap, like I said, not only is he killing it as a player individually, but the rest of the team is following suit. The energy that he brings, those young guys are feeding off it, and who knows what they're seeing him do on the practice field, but the rest of the group is really clicking now here the last couple games, and that's going to be a big deal going down the stretch. They're going to get some quarterbacks here that aren't necessarily super mobile. It's going to be a great opportunity for them to continue adding sacks to the resume, and they get a chance to maybe get to high 30s, low 40s for sacks if they can continue producing number the way they have in recent weeks. So it's an exciting development. You don't want to get too excited with it being a small sample size. But again, what I'm seeing here, I'm seeing a very active line. It looks like the Seahawks are figuring out better rotations, better mixes of players that work off of one another. And they've got a lot of depth now with some of the moves they made, and adding these other players into the fold is only going to improve that. So there's a lot to be optimistic about in that front line moving forward and this pass rush in general. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at CorbinSmithNFL. You can subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever your preferred podcast platform, by going to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. When I return on Monday, Rob Rang will be back with me. We are going to be diving into this Seahawks Week 11 victory over the Cardinals. A lot of in-depth analysis, offensive takeaways, as well as defensive takeaways. And then we'll start shifting towards the Eagles game coming up in Week 12. Enjoy your weekend. Go Hawks.